content of this program is intended for people who are blind and visually impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. So I'm going to start with another article from this book, 80 Things to Do When You're 80. But of course, we all know that these are not just for people who are 80. This one is by Catherine Greitz. She was born and grew up in Budapest, Hungary, and is a Holocaust survivor. Eventually, after the war, she left the country of her birth, attended school in Switzerland, settled in Sydney, Australia, and then finally moved on to London. This is her article. We all know that old age is not easy to bear, but like everything else in life, how we handle growing older is a very individual thing. Some people do it well, others less so. How often do we hear the malcontents complain about aches and pains and the other negative sides of being elderly? They look back and compare their present age with the times when they were young, but fail to put youth in its proper context. They forget all the problems they once experienced, which fortunately do not exist in old age. For example, we no longer have bosses to give us orders, and we no longer have to adhere to strict timetables or have difficult coworkers to contend with. In addition, we no longer have to look for a partner to share our life. The other day, a sentence I read on the internet caught my attention. It said, "Do not regret growing older. It is a privilege denied to many." How true. So many people die young without ever having tasted the joys of life. Love, parented, middle age, and full maturity were not granted to them. I am no stranger to life's dark sides. I was born in Budapest, Hungary, and survived the Holocaust and other political upheavals. Immigration and living in different countries followed, and I had to learn how to fight for myself. I have spent the last 5 decades here in America. At age 65, officially became elderly, that is, a senior citizen. I kept on working as a multilingual tour leader, showing foreign visitors New York City. I was so proud of my city. It was a glamour job that I loved very much. Then I reached the age of 70 and retired from work, but I knew that I could not be idle. I had to do something with my life. So I started to look around for a new project. But what? And then it hit me. I started to look back over the years and realized that by no means had I lived an average life. I realized I needed to put my story down on paper. And so I focused on writing my memoir. This book project took well over 10 years. Because a tremendous amount of historical research needed to be done in order to fill in all the background details of my life story. In my book, I describe what it was like to endure the horrors of the Holocaust in Budapest, followed by several years of communist dictatorship. I self-published my book, From the Danube to the Hudson, about 3 years ago, and I was deeply gratified with its success. A strenuous effort at publicity followed, and it included a good number of lectures. By that time, I was 82 years old. The clock, thankfully, did not stop at that age, even with the loss of the only person I had in my life, my husband, who passed away very recently. I know that I have to go on. But hey, at 85 years old, I'm still only a kid. Reaching one's 80s can be wonderful, provided you are physically and mentally well, have many interests, love people, and recognize that being old is not a punishment. On the contrary, it is the greatest privilege the good Lord can bestow on us. Now we're moving on to the Mayo Clinic magazine, Understanding Alzheimer's, Your Guide to Brain Health. And we're going to start a new area called What is Cognition? And this particular article is called The Cognitive Spectrum. So it's kind of an introduction to this unit. It wasn't long ago that scientists thought there were clear boundaries between normal cognition and cognition considered to be impaired. They believed that people fell into one of two categories. Either they had no disease-related changes in the brain, or they had changes in the brain that led to cognitive impairment. Over the past 30 years, though, the detailed studies of normal aging and the development of mild cognitive impairment, scientists have learned more about how cognitive decline works. They can now identify small changes in mental performance that make it more likely that someone may eventually develop dementia. Just as important, scientists have learned that changes in the brain can begin long before any signs and symptoms are evident, often many years before. Put simply, brain health can't be described strictly in terms of either or. It isn't a normal state or an abnormal state. These findings have caused specialists to reconsider their approach. Experts know now that it may be more accurate to describe a person's cognitive status in terms of a wide, continuous range or spectrum. On one end of the spectrum is normal function, a state in which cognitive skills are intact. At the other end is dementia, a state in which disease has severely disrupted cognitive skills. Between these two extremes are many levels. Within these levels, how a person thinks and learns may shift back and forth between normal and poor. For example, some people have problems with memory loss, but their difficulties aren't enough to disrupt daily living. Their test results show some cognitive impairment, but they don't meet the criteria for dementia. These people may have mild cognitive impairment, a condition that's not as severe as dementia, but of greater concern than the memory changes associated with typical aging. It's somewhere in the middle of the cognitive spectrum. There is a line graph with this article that illustrates the major role that age plays in the cognitive spectrum. As people age, their risks of disorders affecting the brain and brain function increases. There's a top line on the graph that shows typical aging. These are people who experience some degree of cognitive impairment with age. Many factors can reduce or disrupt cognition, such as disease, injury, and trauma, genes, substance abuse, and general wear and tear. In some cases, the cause of cognitive problems may be curable. A metabolic problem caused by very low vitamin B12 is one example. And so this, the top line is sort of a diagonal downward, but not even 45 degrees. How much cognition is impaired with age varies. Some people may get a little more forgetful, but have no other symptoms. Other people may have trouble coming up with names or occasionally misplace their keys. Regardless of a drop-off in cognitive function, people who age typically are still able to function well in everyday life. A small pool of people, most of whom have been blessed with both good health and good genes, represents what may be optimal aging. These are people who continue to enjoy good cognition as they grow old, including memory, reason, judgment, concentration, analytic skill, decision-making, and language use. The lowest line on this graph represents abnormal aging, and with each passing year comes cognitive decline. The decline is often gradual, but it can be sharp. So it really drops off pretty quickly. Matches the top line for just a little while, and then it drops off. Finally, the middle line represents a decline in thinking and memory that's more gradual than what's seen in abnormal aging. Symptoms associated with cognitive impairment often develop in people in their 70s or 80s. Many diseases can cause cognitive impairment later in life, but Alzheimer's disease is the most common. These changes don't occur suddenly. Researchers have found that cognitive changes associated with Alzheimer's disease and other brain diseases begin many years before the first symptoms appear. So in our next session, we will find out about aging that is not typical. And now moving on to AARP, the magazine, and to an article that we have started in this issue, the Back to Normal Health Plan. This is for your 50s, but there again, we can all use it. The past months have weighed on all of us, mentally and physically. Now's the perfect time to assess the damage. So where we stopped last time, we have a depression scale quiz. For the 9 situations below, simply answer this question. Over the last 2 weeks, how often have I encountered or been bothered by this? And it goes from a scale of 0, not at all, 1, several days, 2, more than half the time, 3, nearly every day. So you can keep track for yourself if you want, or just listen. Little interest or pleasure in doing things. Feeling down, depressed, or hopeless. Trouble falling or staying asleep or sleeping too much. Feeling tired or having little energy. Poor appetite or overeating. Feeling bad about yourself or that you are a failure or have let yourself or your family down. Trouble concentrating on things such as reading the newspaper or watching television. Moving or speaking so slowly that other people could have noticed, or the opposite, being so fidgety or restless that you have been moving around a lot more than usual. And finally, thoughts that you would be better off dead or hurting yourself in some way. You can tally up the scores to see your level of depression risk. 5 to 9 is mild, 10 to 14 is moderate, 15 to 19 is moderately severe. 20 or higher is severe. Now let's move on from that, and we're going to challenge your fitness. This is step 5 in this program. While some folks were able to get outside, the pandemic stopped most of us in our tracks. A study of global fitness apps found that step counts dropped by 27% the first month after lockdown. Now's the time to reboot. The 50-something body can decline quickly without exercise, says Robert Linkle, a trainer in Sacramento, California. The key question, can I walk as far, lift as much, or move as loosely as I could a year ago? If you spent the pandemic on your butt, or only, say, taking the occasional walk, Linkle suggests checking your physical function in 2 key spots, shoulders and hips. Sedentary lifestyles raise your risk of developing frozen shoulder, he says. This will happen from simply not putting your arms over your head, and more lower back pain and mobility issues can be traced to the hips. Let's test yourself. Shoulder and hip check. First, stand with your feet shoulder width apart and arms at your sides. Raise your arms slowly until they are straight up overhead as high as you can reach. Hold them up there for 3 seconds and then bring them back down. Repeat this 2 more times. What to look for? A spotter can help look at your posture and alignment, which should be straight up and down. If you come up to 10% or more short of your arms being fully vertical, you've got shoulder mobility issues. For hips, try a basic test for everyday tasks, the proper pickup. It is one of the most basic movements, but if you have hip and back issues, it reveals weaknesses. Stand straight with feet shoulder width apart and an object like a towel or a pair of shoes on the floor in front of you. Keeping your back straight, squat and pick up the object and return to the starting position. This will also tax your knees. I look to see if someone can squat deep enough to pick up things off the floor without rounding their back, which is pretty uncommon as we age over 50, he says. The back rounding happens because the hips lack mobility. If you are capable of getting pretty low and comfortable with good form, Linkle suggests doing the same test with weight, such as a bucket of water. Set these goals for yourself. 7,500 steps a day. That's about 3.75 miles. 12,000 steps is better and just as realistic, Linkle says. Resistance training twice a week. Here is a simple routine that will hit just about every muscle group. Perform 3 sets of 5 to 10 repetitions of each. Good mornings. Stand with your hands at your sides, feet shoulder width apart. Keeping your back and legs straight, bend at the waist until you feel a tug on your hamstrings. Return to start. The key is not to round your back, or try any exercise in which you bend at the hip. That's an option. Dumbbell rolls. Hold a dumbbell in your right hand. Stand next to a bench and place your left knee and lower leg on the bench while bending at the waist and placing your left palm on the bench for support. Keeping your back straight while bent over, pull the weight up to chest level, hold for a moment, and lower the weight. Focus on engaging your back and shoulders, not your arms. Or try any exercise in which you pull weight towards you. Overhead press. Stand with your feet shoulder width apart while holding light dumbbells at shoulder level. Lift the weights over your head as high as you can. Hold for a moment and return to starting position. Or try any exercise in which you press a weight upward. Lunges. Stand with feet shoulder width apart, step forward, and lower your body until your front and back knees are bent nearly 90 degrees, without your back knee touching the ground. Pause, then return to the starting position. Repeat, but with a backward step. Do an equal number of lunges with each leg. Or you can try any leg exercise in which you split your feet, one forward and one back. The farmer's carry. Stand straight with a heavy weight in each hand. Full buckets of water can sub in for dumbbells here. Keeping your arms and back straight, walk 20 paces, then return. Consider that one full set. Or you can try any exercise in which you carry a heavy weight. Here's a sidebar article, at home testing tip. If you use a home blood pressure monitor, next time measure both arms. A review of 24 studies in the journal Hypertension looked at blood pressure tests on 53,000 people. It found that those with systolic readings differing by 5 mmHgs or more between arms had higher rates of cardiovascular death, even in those who had no pre-existing heart disease. If you notice a difference, talk to your doctor. And also another sidebar, your fast rebuilding plan, the two most important ingredients for resetting the human body. Start small. It doesn't take much work to generate measurable health benefits early on. A recent small study has participants interrupt a normally sedentary 8-hour period with 4-second bursts of high-intensity stationary cycling 5 times an hour over a workday, 2 minutes, 40 seconds of exercise total, and found that fat oxidation benefits lasted into the following day. This example is extreme, but other research has shown that as little as 10 minutes a day of exercise has benefits. Also, value perfect form over the number of repetitions. Technique becomes more vital the older we get, because if we get out of alignment, it can quickly damage majorly. Linkle says, a fitness pro who specializes in training an older clientele can help not just with great form, but also understanding how much to expect from your body at your current fitness level, even if you only do a few sessions to learn the basics or to relearn them if you've been away from the gym for a year. Continuing with AARP the magazine, finding their heroes. This article is about Amy Tan on her hero, Maxine Hong Kingston. Sharing their untold stories. This is in the field of literature. In 1979, Amy Tan's roommate gave her a copy of The Woman Warrior, Maxine Hong Kingston's groundbreaking memoir of her experiences as a daughter of parents who had immigrated from China. I didn't think of myself as a writer at the time, recalls Tan, 69, a child of Chinese immigrants herself. I didn't start writing for another 4 years, but I remember reading the book and loving it. The Woman Warrior gave me the idea that, yes, Asian Americans can write stories and they don't have to be stories about white people. Tan published The Joy Luck Club in 1989. It was the first of her six, and counting, best-selling novels. Shortly after the book was released, she went to one of Kingston's readings, introduced herself, and received a warm welcome. The first thing Maxine did was hug me and say, "We're sisters," Tam remembers. The writers stayed in touch and quickly bonded, jokingly sharing anecdotes about people confusing one for the other in public. When Kingston, 80, started her career, she had had few models to follow other than Jade Snow Wong, whose book Fifth Chinese Daughter was published in 1950. For guidance, Kingston looked to black writers such as Ralph Ellison, Richard Wright, James Baldwin, and Dick Gregory. "I found so much strength in the way they wrote about being invisible or about the inner life," she recalls. "They wrote about things that had never been written about before. So I said to myself, I can do that too. No reader has ever been able to read a story like mine." To Tan, though, Kingston wasn't just telling her own story. She was creating an opening for other unheard stories to be told. "Maxine is an activist," Tan said. "She's always championed those who have no voice." "Now there are more of us Asian American writers coming," Kingston adds. "There are Vietnamese writers and Hmong writers, and writers from the Pacific Islands, and I feel that I'm part of a movement. If that movement has brought attention to diverse voices, it has also helped anchor those voices as fully American." At first, Tan notes, her books, along with Kingston's, were shelved in bookstores as Asian American literature. "That divide doesn't occur anymore," she says. "Our books are in the same section as other fiction writers' books." The sidebar article with this item is called "A Diverse Community." The term Asian American is a surprisingly recent invention, though people from Asia and the Pacific Islands have been coming to the U.S. mainland since before the country was founded. It wasn't until the 1960s that the term was coined by two activists to unite Americans with roots from across the Pacific. The Asian American and Pacific Islander, AAPI, community is some 6% of the U.S. population, according to 2018 census data that includes 22.6 million Americans with ancestors from China, Japan, Korea, Southeast Asia, or the Indian subcontinent, plus 1.6 million with roots in the Pacific Islands, such as Native Hawaiians, Samoans, and Marshallese. Now moving on to another article in that magazine under the heading of Real People, Inspiring Stories of Friends and Neighbors in Their Own Words. Retiree First Responder. "Hey, Chief, sign me up." Why retired truck driver Bob Halberstadt fights fires at 80. And there is a picture of him with a fire at the Blairstown number one volunteer fire department truck, ladder 46. And this gentleman has a huge smile on his face. He's all decked out in his work clothes here. "Just the other night, around midnight, there was a report of a brush fire in some woods behind a house. My pager went off, and I scrambled to the firehouse to jump on the engine and ride over to the call. We were marching through the woods behind the house looking for the fire when all of a sudden the homeowner comes up and says, 'You don't remember me, do you? You came to my house when my two-year-old son has a seizure.' I asked him, 'How old is he now?' 'He's 16, the man said. "That's always a good feeling. I've probably had 2,000 patients in all these years. I don't remember many of them, but they always remember me. I've been a volunteer emergency medical technician in town for 26 years, and for nearly 2 years, I've also been a volunteer firefighter. There was no big reason I decided to become a firefighter. I'm just always open to new adventures. When I heard they were recruiting high school kids for a new class of firefighters, I said, 'Hey, Chief, sign me up.' In class, the first thing we did was climb up into a third-story window in full gear with an air pack and an axe, and then go down to the second floor and climb out a window. I said to myself, are they out of their minds? And then, I hope I didn't say that out loud. The gear we wear weighs about 65 pounds. When we drag a hose filled with water into a building, it probably totals 100 pounds in all. But I was right there with the younger people doing everything they did. I haven't had to carry anyone out of a burning building yet, but things can get pretty exciting. Once we were fighting a house fire from the outside, the facade fell forward toward us, and we had to rush up a hill behind us to safety. It was a little scary, but I love being a firefighter. It gives me a sense of purpose. It doesn't really matter how old I am, as long as I am able to do this. Bob Halderstadt is a retired newspaper delivery truck driver for the New York Daily News. He lives in Blairstown, New Jersey now. And finally, we have a time for a few more little items from this list that my friend in Canada sent me. About 1.2 million people die each year in car accidents worldwide, including distracted or drunk driving. We now have one accident every 60,000 miles. With autonomous driving, that will drop to one accident in 6 million miles. That will save more than a million lives worldwide each year. Some traditional car companies will doubtless go bankrupt. They will try the evolutionary approach and just build a better car, while tech companies, Tesla, Apple, Google, will do the revolutionary approach and build a computer on wheels. Look at what Volvo is doing right now. No more internal combustion engines in their vehicles starting this year, with the 2019 models using all electric or hybrid only, with the intent of phasing out the hybrid models. Many engineers from Volkswagen and Audi are completely terrified of Tesla, and they should be. Look at all the companies offering all-electric vehicles. That was unheard of only a few years ago. Insurance companies will have massive trouble because without accidents, the costs will become cheaper. Their auto insurance business model will disappear. Real estate will change. If you can work from home or from literally anywhere, people will abandon their towers to move far away to more beautiful, affordable locations. Folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.